This is Liberty Bell Smack with your hosts, Mark Mancini, Sal Tartaglia, and Marianne Castello. Talking everything sports, everything Philly style. Liberty Bell Smack, right here, right now. Yes, that's right. You are listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here. It's that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style right here on WWDB AM Talk 860. We are here every Thursday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's prime time drive time for you in the Northeast. And if you can't hear us on Talk 860, no worries. You can find us on HD2 radio stations 97.5, or you can listen to us anytime, anywhere by downloading the WWDB radio app, or you can go right to WWDBAM.com and click listen live. And if that's not good enough, you could call the listener, even better yet, talk to us at 888-329-3306. I am your host, Marianne Castello, and I see everybody here is in the green room ready and prepared for a great show. So without further ado, he is a broadcast vet born in Pittsburgh, but raised in sunny LA. You know him from his years in the rink with Extreme Professional Wrestling on TV. He's got over 17 years behind the mic from San Diego to Los Angeles with Sirius XM, the SB Nation American Forces Network, and now Philly on WWDB AM, as well as the Saucy Spin online radio show and the Breaking It Down podcast. If it's sports, he's done it, or he knows all about it. Let's welcome our host, Mr. Mark Mancini. Hey, Mark.
Wow, you are the best moderator in the business. So blessed to work with you, Sal. These great guests that keep coming in here each and every week. And man, I'm ready to throw the cheesesteaks, jump on the link, kick the spectrum in the Delaware River. I'm ready.
Well, close to the Delaware is where our next host is. He's right there sitting in the city of brotherly love. He is a product of the schools and playing fields of Drexel Hills, Delaware, by way of Southwest Philadelphia. He's been in the Navy. He's been in the construction industry and was a nuclear medicine tech. And while doing all of that, he even had time to compile over 30 years of highlights and stats of World Series games and published his first book, World Series Chronology. While doing press for the book, he developed a taste for broadcasting, and here he is. Let's welcome our host, Sal Tartaglia. Hey, Sal.
Good evening, Philadelphia. How are you? Just to reiterate what Mark said, you are definitely the best intro person in the business.
I'm going to ask, what do you guys want?
Yeah, she's going to want more money, and you and I will be doing the show on a street corner in Philly.
Well, I have to tell you, we have a great show lined up for this evening, but first, I want to tell you, we have some commercial breaks we have to get to. So I am Marianne Castello along with Mark Mancini and Sal Tartaglia from Liberty Bell Smack. We'll be right back right after this.
Experience the madness on Thursday and Friday, March 17th and 18th at the all-new Delco Cup. Opening round of the tournament, enjoy $3 domestics and $3.50 imports from noon to 7. You heard me, noon to 7. Don't miss a single second of action from the opening tip-offs to the game-winning buzzer beaters. On every TV, watch every play, catch every game. Be a part of the madness at the all-new Delco Cup, 209 Baltimore Pike in Springfield. Please drink responsibly.
I'm Kirk Hawkins. When I'm in Philly, I listen to WWDB Liberty Bell Smack.
Hello, this is Carolyn, your Atlanta Falcons bird lady. When I'm in Philly, I listen to Liberty Bell Smack. Lip smacking, trash talking, good Philadelphia style talk radio, talk 680. WWDB. Hootie hoo!
You absolutely have to love that battle cry. We are back. And Sal, along with that battle cry with the hootie hoo from Bird Lady, all I know is that I know she can stop traffic. And when she does, you might have a little slip up and hit your car into somebody else's. And if you do, what do we do, Sal?
Visit my friend Joey Trainer, owner of JT Auto Body, located at 416 Promise Avenue in Fulcroft, Pennsylvania. His staff of certified technicians make dents disappear. In need of expert body work? Take your car or truck, no job is too big or small, to JT Auto Body. Call them at 610-534-1643. Tell them Sal sent you.
Well, Sal sends everybody, which is great. And I have to tell you guys, we have a lady coming on and we're going to get to her right now. So, you know, I hope you guys can handle this. Okay.
Yeah. I always say when God created women, the world was complete.
Smart man. So here we go. She is a financial literacy expert, a best-selling author, speaker, and helps clients develop healthy financial habits and a generational wealth mindset. She's obtained an MBA in investments and securities from the prestigious Franklin W. Olin Graduate School of Business at Babson College in Babson Park, Massachusetts. She earned her BA in international relations in Spanish from Simmons University in Boston, Massachusetts. During her career, she earned numerous major professional financial advisement and analysis certifications, including chartered financial analysis from CFA Institute in August of 2000, certified financial education instructor in October of 2020, and certified financial planning consultant in November of 2020, both from the National Financial Education Council. She held major positions in investor relations as both a consultant and vice president at two investment management organizations in her professional past before spending over a decade as the VP Fixed Income Chief Compliance Officer for Hart Capital Management Incorporated in Spokane, Washington and Greenville, South Carolina, working portfolio management and compliance. Her responsibilities included managing fixed income assets, exchange trade funds, and individual securities for investment portfolios for those investors. She is the founder for Financial Literacy for Her and combined forces with her co-founder Erica Neal to use their unique coaching program, which includes elements of both mindset development and financial education for common life events such as overcoming financial hardships and challenges, life changes like graduation or childbirth, preparing for transitions in our personal finances, and gaining control over our financial solutions. It is specifically designed to be a safe place for women to help women overcome their fear of money and empower them to live in financial freedom by providing financial coaches with a certified personal finance consultant designation with objectives and responsibilities to help women reach their goals that requires changing behaviors, developing systems, and prioritizing financial action steps. She bravely shared her story in April of 2021 as a contributor in a number one Amazon best-selling book, Aspire, Women Finding Their Purpose, to inspire women to reframe the lessons of their past to learn how they can serve others to make the world a better place. In November of 2021, she and Erica Neal, both certified personal finance consultants, authored their first book titled In the Mind of Gold, The Girlfriend's Guide to Financial Freedom, which became another Amazon number one bestseller. The book shares ways you can strengthen your financial position and improve your financial situation by discovering and modifying your money mindset, creating a budget, learning how credit works, to name a few. It also provides tools that can help you address and modify your financial behaviors so you can avoid common financial traps, align your finances with your purpose and life goals, and understand and modify your financial behaviors and take actionable steps to improve your financial situation. This book was so well received, they turned it into several online courses by offering students everything from a mini course focused on budgeting to a comprehensive course covering all areas of personal finance. Concurrently, she is the principal of East Light Investments and partners with passive investors to acquire value-add apartment buildings in the Southeast. She's a certified minister of dance, a world traveler, teaches dream sequencing, which all helped her heal from stage 3 colon cancer. Now she's completing her world travels right here in Philly. Watch out, boys. We have another woman in here. Let's welcome Karen Azer to Liberty Bell Smack. Hey, Karen.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Wow.
Welcome aboard.
What a great bunch of guys we have here.
Unbelievable. Karen, I want to start out with the stage 3 colon cancer, how you found out you had that, and coming back from that. I know a lot of things go through somebody's mind when they have something pop up on that like that, but take us through that, because all the other accolades are instrumental too, but I think the listeners and everybody would like to know on that stage 3 colon cancer, how you battled it and what your thoughts were going through that.
Yeah, definitely. It was in 2015. I had actually in 2014, I was in a horrific car accident
And towards the end of that, I was on bed rest for 12 weeks. And they didn't know, once I started to recover, they didn't know what was wrong with me. And they soon discovered that I had long-term Lyme disease. And all of a sudden, I actually got neuropathy in all my limbs, actually into my tongue. And I was searching for a way to get some healing for that. And so I was working with a holistic doctor in Chicago. And when I was doing that, all of a sudden my body was just shutting down. And I discovered, you know, as you said, that I had third stage colon cancer. And so at that point, you know, I'd already been dealing with the long-term Lyme and dealing with that, people not understanding what was going on. And the fact that I was using the alternative means, they thought I lost my mind. And when I got the diagnosis, I actually, at that point, I said, well, I'm either going to be delivered or I'm going to heaven, and I'm good with either one. So I decided at that point that I wasn't going to let anybody with any kind of fear be around me. I kept my circle pretty small. I did do it all through alternative means. It was pretty serious. So my family already didn't understand what I was doing. So they had, so I told them, I said, give this a month and I'll see if there's any progress. And if not, I'll go the traditional route. And I had some immediate, impact. And within 6 months, the mass had gone completely down. And then I continued to do treatments and getting IVs and other treatments for 3 years. And some of the best part of that is when I was going into the treatment center is that I was able to share my story with people and I was able to inspire them. And, I'm kind of known as Miss Happy Pants. And and so that's what I was doing in there. So I try to come in there and I try to inspire people and try to not let them be overcome by fear, because it can be pretty scary.
Yeah, you're a blessing. And I will tell you this, sometimes if people go through adversity, they either throw in the towel and wallow around in on it, or they move forward. And moving forward, boy almighty, that number one in Amazon, your book, that had to feel gratifying.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it did. And it's interesting because that first book that came out last year, the Aspire book, I actually documented my journey. So I talked about the car accident, I talked the Lyme, I talked about some childhood trauma, some other things that I had, because I took that opportunity to just kind of like literally clear my house out, clear everything out and share that with everybody. So it was so exciting when that came out, and I was with a group of 20 other authors that had their own stories. And it's very exciting to know that we really could, lift a lot of people and lift their spirits and make them feel better.
That's wonderful.
One more. Okay.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I was going to throw one more and give it over to you, Sal. I know people, when they look at who was instrumental in their life to do what you're doing today, a lot of people say their parents and I don't want to say that's the old cliche, but who was really instrumental in your life to really take this to where you've taken it so far and beyond?
Yeah, I've had a coach, a personal coach in my life. And that is, I really can't say, recommend that highly enough for somebody. Because the thing about it is, you need somebody who can speak into your life, who you can hear from. Because the problem is we surround ourselves by people who tell us what we want to hear and won't give us the tough love. And I had enough people, like I said, just like with the whole cancer thing, she told me, she said, look, I've been around a lot of people who've dealt with this, and I'm going to tell you what you need to do. And I trusted her. So I took that advice. And, you surround yourself by, they say, success leaves clues. So you go to look at people who are doing well, who are doing what you want to do, and you try to get them to speak into your life. And so you can push yourself.
Yeah. Congratulations, Karen, on your positivity. As we all know, that's essential with respect to that malady. My son's a survivor, so I give everyone credit who comes through that that problem.
That's great news. I'm glad you survived.
Thank you. Yeah, he's 4 years good. And
good.
Pretty soon, I'll be able to take this off. I'm keeping this on until the 5-year threshold.
Oh, yeah, the big number 5. Yeah. You better have a big party for that, because it will happen.
Yes. And you know how they make, for instance, they had a kid in school. His name was Shelley. So they put Shelley Strong on all these, and everything's strong, So they changed it. His last name's Tartaglia. So they changed it, and they spelled it T-U-F-F instead of the right way. And it says Tartaglia Tough. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes, yeah. I can see it.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, And, you know, you meet so many people, it's like it becomes a community. So many people just, they love each other and they want to help one another. And I guess a lot of that bled into your programs because, you know, with respect to your the programs that you run, the one became an online course for single moms. And I know you counsel your clients.
Yep.
And you also write portfolios. So I'm thinking that in the beginning, you know, people are going to need to, you know, take your advice and try to build, you know, their little house, so to speak. And then afterward, the portfolios will come into place because there's no point.
Well, you know, absolutely, because that's a big thing. And I would say, you know, because I've been in the traditional investment business for almost 25 years. And so I was really used to doing, you know, the traditional approach. But that's one of the reasons I got into this coaching, because I really wanted to help people get over those mindset issues, because I started Financial Literacy for Hers because I saw so many women coming in towards the end of their careers or going through some sort of life change, like a divorce or a death, and they weren't prepared for the retirement and they didn't know where to begin. And so I thought, you know what, I want to educate them and I want to help them, you know, because a lot of us have mindset issues. You know, if our parents fought about money, we make a vow we don't want to talk about money, or right, saw somebody do something bad with money and we made a vow that I don't want to hang on to my money. And so that's one of the things that we can do to help unlock that so that you can really open yourself up to start making money, keeping money, and blessing others with your money.
Is this open to women of all brackets? Because I noticed in your East Light investment thing, when you talk about a tradition from traditional to alternative investments. And the reason I bring up the brackets is because some women naturally can't afford this. So do you administer to all brackets?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that question. In fact, we just had a team meeting before this call, and we have the Financial Literacy for Her Scholarship Fund. And in fact, that's where we put all the proceeds from our book, actually. It goes towards that fund so that we can help those who need a leg up and are ready to take action.
That's great. I had one other question. Do you have any outreach programs targeted globally, or are you just in the United States?
Right now we're in the United States, but I actually been getting a ton of traction in the UK. I get called on to come to a lot of radio shows. I love to talk. So right. So I end up sharing. So I'm getting a global reach pretty quickly. I actually have a lot of, I have people, followers that I have in a lot in Australia, New Zealand as well.
One last thing before we probably move on, with respect to, I don't know if you're familiar, Brittany Griner, the WNBA player that's detained in Russia.
Oh, yeah.
What are your thoughts? Do you think that how it's going to unfold?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, it really broke my heart to see that, because, you know, that they would choose somebody to be, you know, be able to be targeted. Because, I mean, the timing of that just seems a bit suspect to me, to be honest. So it just, you know, they're up to no good. And it breaks my heart, you know, that they have to choose somebody like that, you know, because this tends not to end very well. And so, you know, we can all hope and pray for her and see what we can do to see what we can help her out and stand behind her.
Yeah, nicely put. Happy International Women's Day, by the way, we just
had. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. And if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here on WWDB AM Talk 860. And I am your host, Marianne Costello, along with Mr. Mark Mancini and Sal Tartaglia. And we will be right back right after these messages.
Experience the madness on Thursday and Friday, March 17th and 18th at the all-new Delco Cup. Opening round of the tournament, enjoy $3 domestics and $3.50 imports from noon to 7. You heard me, noon to 7. Don't miss a single second of action from the opening tip-offs to the game-winning buzzer beaters. On every TV, watch every play, catch every game. Be a part of the madness at the all-new Delco Cup, 209 Baltimore Pike in Springfield. Please drink responsibly.
Colin Lazenby, and when I'm in Philly, I listen to Liberty Bell Smack on WWDB.
Hi, this is Tarik Brock, first base coach of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And when I'm in Philly, or when we play in Philly, I listen to Liberty Bell Smack on WWDB.
Great.
We are back right here on Liberty Bell Smack for that lip smack and trash talk in good Philadelphia style. And if you're just tuning in and you want to see our lovely faces, you can do so by going to our Liberty Bell Smack Facebook page or write to WWDB AM Talk 860's Facebook page as well. And Sal, I have to tell you, I know you have friends. I know you have a lot of friends in Philly. Tell us about one of them.
Well, Joey Trainer owns JT Auto Body, and I got to let you know, for superior auto body repairs at very reasonable prices, bring your damaged vehicle to JT Auto Body. It's located at 416 Promise Avenue in Fallcroft, Pennsylvania. Call them at 610-534-1643 for expert work done by owner Joey Trainer's staff of certified technicians. Again, his number, 610-534-1643. Tell him Sal sent you.
There you go. You heard it right from Sal. And we have our next guest waiting in that green room patiently, so we're going to bring him on right now. He is a former professional baseball pitcher who played for 7 years in the major leagues for the New York Mets and the Chicago Cubs and has worked in baseball for 4 decades. He's a very big man. During his playing career, he stood at 6'6 in height and over 230 pounds. Although he was a fine baseball player growing up in both Westchester County, New York, and the Miami, Florida area, he obtained a basketball scholarship for the University of South Carolina. He also played baseball at the school and was a key contributor to the Gamecocks baseball squad success as it advanced to the finals to the College World Series in 1977. During his career, he pitched and batted right-handed, and he's been known for his pitch selection that included a fastball, a slider, a changeup, and a slurve. He was drafted by the Texas Rangers in the 22nd round of the 1977 Major League Baseball draft. After 3 years, he was sent to the New York Mets, where he made his MLB debut on August 31st, 1980, in Candlestick Park in San Francisco, California. On September 13th that year, he won his first major league start against the Chicago Cubs, snapping a 13-game losing streak for his club. In 1985, he went 10-8 with a 3.44 ERA and a career high of 191 innings pitched. In 1986, he made only one appearance for the New York Mets, pitching 1.5 innings in relief in the third game of the season when he tore his cartilage in his left knee that put him on the disabled list. By the time he was healed and ready to return to the game, he had lost his spot in the starting rotation. The New York Mets traded him to the Chicago Cubs, where he remained with the Cubs through 1987 before retiring. During his 7-year MLB career, he had 248 total appearances on the mound, including 119 as a starting pitcher. He completed 8 starts and also picked up 8 saves in his career. He worked 940 total innings, striking out 396 hitters, and with a career average of 4.00. He had a very good control over his career, walking slightly under 200 batters, that excludes intentional walks in his combined career, or about 2 per 9 innings. After his career ended, he attended the University of Miami School of Law and graduated in 1991. Using both his law degree and prior baseball experience, he was hired for front office executive management positions with the San Diego Padres and the Chicago Cubs, and eventually served as the general manager of the Chicago Cubs from the 1994 through the year 2000. At the time, he was the youngest general manager active in the game at only age 38. He was so thought of by the Cubs that he remained as special assistant to McPhail for 10 years afterward. He made history by hiring Don Baylor as the organization's first African-American manager. From 2010 to 2015, he served as a professional scout in the Toronto Blue Jays organization. After his baseball career ended, he worked as a real estate professional for Keller Williams Arizona Realty, working for Rick Barker, the same guy he released in 1999 with the Cubs. He had a very quick wit and often used humor when communicating with the New York press, often using his mastery of clubhouse slang and humorous fashions in which many fans appreciated. He was asked by Newsday to put together a story using his clubhouse slang. Back then, social media was not a thing, but it definitely went viral as baseball fans bought toilet paper printed with his quote, and it said, "The bases were drunk, and I painted the black with my best yakker. but Blue squeezed me and I went full. I came back with my heater, but the stick flares, won the other way, and chalk flies for two bases, three Ernies. Next thing I know, Skipper hooks me and I'm sipping suds with the clubby. He's bringing his famous custom toilet paper into our Philly clubhouse for today's smack show. Let's have a big Liberty Bell welcome to Ed Lynch. Hi, Ed.
Hello, Mary Ann. How are you?
Very good.
You did your homework. You did your homework on that intro. Holy cow. I forgot half of that stuff.
Well, there you go.
You know, unbelievable, Ed. I don't know where to start on this thing because I can use you in the wrestling days when I was a ring announcer with XPW, but that's a story for another day dealing with that New York press. We'll get into that. But 6'6", 230, I need the Lakers suck out here in Los Angeles, and I know the Knicks suck in New York, but I'm trying to put together a team of big guys that could beat those teams handily, and I've come up with you. I don't know, a power forward, not a small forward, a power forward. I need Jeff Juden, the Randy Johnson, John Candelaria, and I'm trying to think of the fifth guy. It would have to be the late, great J.R. Richard. Any thought to that?
Well, John Candelaria is clearly the best basketball player in that group. He was an All-American high school player in New York, but that's very flattering. And the minute I come up with some cartilage, I'm going to come out and play some basketball with you guys.
Well, let me ask you something on the New York press. I know we've seen some people go there. It's been a hard environment to contend with, maybe Philly too, not like some other cities like sleepy San Diego down there where I used to do radio and some of these other transplant cities. But when you look at New York, how tough is it to face these guys and come up with a quick wit like you have?
Well, I mean, those guys are, they're eminently fair. At least they were back in the days when I was dealing with them. And the main thing with them is accessibility. I mean, as long as you're there and you're answering the tough questions, you know, they're going to try to help you as any way they can. I mean, if you stink and you come out and say, hey, I stunk today, I mean, what else can you say? And they were good about that. I mean, I never had a problem with the New York media. I never did. The Chicago media, obviously I was in a different position as general manager. It's a little different. You're treated a little different by the media than you are treated as a player. But, you know, as long as you're accessible and you try to answer questions as honestly as you can, you shouldn't have a problem.
Oh, Ed, hi, Sal Tartaglia here.
Hi.
I just, before I start, I wanted to say that the worst part of the quote that Mary cited was that your ERA ballooned.
Well, to this day, I think my ERA is 3.99999. I don't know. I think they rounded it up to 4. That kind of pissed me off when I saw that final ERA.
Statisticians, you know?
Oops. There you go.
Listen, I wanted to bring up your best year, 85. And you, as Mayor's told us, you won 10-8 with a 3.44 ERA. And, you know, there was a lot of things you did. I think you had a career high in innings, things of that nature. And your reward was that you were traded to the Cubs and you missed the Fall Classic in New York the next year. Now, as a fan, I know that would aggravate me. As a player, what was your response to that? How did you feel?
Well, obviously, in private, I was devastated. But, you know, when you're out in front of the media, I mean, to admit that you didn't think something like this could happen, you're kind of showing you're very naive. I mean, I understood from day one that it was a business.
Yeah,
and I knew something like this could happen. And when I hurt my knee, I went down on my assignment in Norfolk. You know, I had won an arbitration case the previous winter against the Mets. And at that time I was making, I think, $500,000, which is less than the minimum now. But, you know, when I was down on my rehab, Rick Aguilera came up from the minor leagues and was pitching very well. And he was making the minimum. And he was a better pitcher than I was. And so I knew it was coming. And you know, one of the reasons I was hired as general manager of the Chicago Cubs, Andy McPhail, when he interviewed me, said he was looking for someone with a Chicago Cub connection. So if I had not been traded to the Cubs, I may not have become a general manager. So I try to look at it that way. It all worked out very well for me.
The darkest hour is the hour before dawn. Yeah, that was great. With respect to your career numbers, you have 119 starts and only 8 complete games. Now, I know today's game is stenched in that that type of philosophy. But back when you played, it wasn't as apparent. And I'm just curious, was that due to analytics, conditioning, or just game situations?
No, it was due to the fact that we had Jesse Orosco and Roger McDowell in the bullpen. And so, you know, if I had a 3-1 lead after 8 innings, I'm out of the game. You know, it's just, that's just the way it is. I never once asked to come out of a game. But, I mean, our bullpen was so good that, you know, why leave it a starting pitcher with a 1-run lead when you got those two guys out there? So, but, you know, my 6 complete games in 1985, I think, like, several years since then, not only would I've led the league in complete games, but some teams didn't have 6 complete games in the last few years. If you look at the numbers, so, you know, in fact, I had 6 complete games that year, and, you know, Dwight had 19, but, you know, he was Dwight good, and I was at, but, you know, I just went as long, as hard as I could, and, you know, and let the manager make the decision.
So game situations, you know, basically. That's good. All right.
You know, Ed, when you, and I know, I want to get Karen into the mix too, get a fatal four-way here going. But when you look at baseball today, when you played it, how much has changed? Because it's almost like a head scratcher in some ways. We got a guy at second base. I know we're getting rid of the 7-inning doubleheaders and everything. I know they're trying to speed up the game in more ways than one, but how has it changed? I mean, there's the stolen base has been extinct, and how about the bunt? I mean, is there anything else that's changed in this game since you last played it?
Well, they teach you to pitch away from contact. If you notice, you know, when Marianne was reading my stats, I had 100 innings and 250 strikeouts, whatever. I mean, I didn't try to strike people out. I mean, my goal was to make them put the ball in play, not walk people, don't put people on base. Strike to me were just something that, unless it was a third one out, you're trying to strike somebody out, felt that I was better off getting ahead in the count and making that hitter put the ball in play. And I don't see a lot of that now. It's either, you know, when you have a system and a philosophy in baseball where hitters don't care how much they strike out and pitchers are trying to strike everybody out, I mean, that's a recipe for historic numbers in strikeouts. And that's what we're seeing. And, you know, our feeling was, you know, if you're a hitter, nothing good can happen when you strike out. But the baseball was different back then. The parks were bigger. The position players weren't as big and long. They didn't generate the bat speed they do now. So you had to play a little more of an inside game. You had to, you know, make productive outs. You had to move runners along. But now it's just swing for the fences. And, you know, you strike out 3 times and hit a 3-run homer. That's a successful day. You know, it isn't any error, but that's what their goal is now.
Karen, do you have any questions for Ed?
Yeah. What was it like playing for the Gamecocks?
Oh, I loved it. You know, I went there to play basketball, and you know, I played with some pretty good players, and I played for 2 years, and I didn't get to play much. And every year they had 6 more All-American recruits coming in, but you know, I played with guys like Mike Dunleavy and Brian Winters, Alex English. Donnie Walsh was the assistant coach. I was recruited by a guy by the name of Bobby Kremens. So these were big time basketball people. And our practices were rough. And I was a 17-year-old kid. I mean, I waited a year ahead of my whole class. So, you know, I played every high school basketball game at the age of 16. And then the next year I'm 17 and I'm in practice with these guys. And that was a thrill. And I asked I wanted to go pitch. The baseball coach was Bobby Richardson. And I asked if I could have a tryout. And he said, no, I don't have any uniforms left, which is coach speak for no. So Frank McGuire called him up and, hey, why don't you just look at him and see what you think? So I went out there and I threw much harder then than I ever did in the big league because I blew my arm out in college. But I got on the mound, I threw one pitch, and he said, I just found you a uniform. So,
That's an awesome story.
But my first 2 years, you know, they were ranked number 2 in the country. We, you know, my freshman year, I threw 1 inning. My sophomore year, I threw 2 innings. We lost a national championship game my sophomore year. And then my junior year, I got to pitch and I was 10-0 and I didn't get drafted. And I won a game in the regionals. And And I could never understand that for years until I found out later that I wasn't eligible. I wasn't old enough. I was a 20-year-old junior, so I wasn't old enough to be drafted. So then my senior year, I came back, got off to a great start. Then I hurt my shoulder, came back, pitched in the College World Series. We lost the national championship game again. And then I got drafted in the 22nd round. I was surprised I even got drafted. So, but my 4 years in Carolina were awesome. You know, I went there at age 17. I left at age 21. I came in as a young kid. I left as a man. And, you know, I'm very proud of my accomplishments there. And after I left there, and on May 22nd, I'm going to be inducted into the State of South Carolina Hall of Fame in Columbia. So I'm very proud of that, too.
Congratulations.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Oh, God bless you.
Well, if you are just tuning in, we might be able to turn Ed Lynch from a man to a boy after this show on Liberty Bell. And you could do that. We are here every Thursday night right here on WWDB AM Talk.
That's a good one.
And if you're just tuning in, you know that we have our great guests, both Karen Azer and Ed Lynch, on with us this evening. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor and join our family on Liberty Bell Smack, you can do so by actually dropping us a line to libertybellsmack@gmail.com. We would love for you to be part of the family. And we are here every Thursday evening, primetime drive time. That's 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So thank you so much for everybody who tunes in every week. And I know that Mark and Sal,
Mickey,
it's like a free-for-all now. Back to you guys.
I wanted to say something, Ed, to you about specifically when you were at South Carolina. Did you ever, as a walk-on, did they ever give you a partial?
No, I had a full basketball scholarship.
I know. That pays for it.
Yeah, that was pre-Title IX, those guys.
Did you guys ever make the tourney while you were there?
In basketball?
Yeah, yeah.
We lost my freshman year. We lost to Furman in the first round of the NCAA tournament in the Palestra in Philadelphia.
Wow, remember that? Wow. Yeah.
You talk about a dump.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No insult intended, but I mean, literally, your locker was a nail in the wall. That was your locker. You hung your stuff on that. Yeah, and if we had won that game, we were going to play another game, and I felt like we could win that next game, and then we're going to go play North Carolina State with David Thompson and that crew, and UCLA was in that. We were going to play North Carolina State in the regional. They won the regional, and then they wound up beating UCLA in the semis and won the national championship. So we probably wouldn't have gotten by David Thompson and NC State in 1974.
Yeah, the Admiral. I just saw something where I don't know if I'm pronouncing the school's name correctly. Bellarine? Is anybody familiar with that?
Yeah, I saw that story today.
Yeah, they won their conference, and they're not eligible to go to the tournament because they're switching divisions. So they're switching divisions. They were switching divisions while they were winning all these games. That doesn't make sense to me. Are you familiar with any of that, anybody, the rule?
No, I'm not.
I never heard of it.
Yeah.
For a loop.
First time. I mean, I heard of this happening before, but it was a sanction. This is just because they're switching gears and are moving up next year. That doesn't.
Well, if it's an NCAA decision, then it's certainly going to be wrong. I know that.
nice way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you feel about that?
Ed, they said the quotes that you are famous for. I was going to ask for an example, but Marianne gave us a great one. But one that I read, I'm paraphrasing here. When you were hired as the GM in Chicago, you said, "I'm a confident person. I have confidence in my abilities. Otherwise, I wouldn't have pitched 7 years in the big leagues with an 81 mile per hour fastball." So I like that. I like that. So you're a command guy, and you're noted for that and your wits. I want to concentrate on the wits because I believe baseball is the most cerebral of all the team sports. Your thoughts, because I know you're a basketball guy too.
No, I agree. You know, and plus pitchers, we got nothing to do but stand in the outfield during batting practice and think of witty things to say. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, we're smarter than the other sports, but, you know, there's more access to us, you know, in football. You know, maybe if you're a running back for the Eagles, you might sit down with the press twice in a week. or if you're the coach, you have a press conference on Wednesday, and then after the game, you'll have a press conference. But in baseball, it's before the game, after the game, 7 days a week for 9 months, right, basically, is what you're looking at. So the more you have to talk, the dumber and the smarter you're going to seem to everybody. So hopefully, you know, the smarter things are what people remember, but I'm sure I said a lot of dumb things too.
You know what? Let's give it over to Karen, or maybe you have a question for Karen, Ed, and then I got a couple questions to throw at you.
Is this Karen? You there?
I am.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you can explain Bitcoin to me, you must be the smartest person.
I can't explain it to you, but I certainly know that it made me a lot of money last year.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
That's what I was, you know, in fact, that's what I always tell my clients. I'm like, take 10% of your money and have fun. And that's what I did. And I had a lot of fun.
Good for you.
It's like a
to South Carolina, Marianne.
Yes.
It sounds like a slot machine to me. You can win, but not understand how you won. Yeah. That just loses it for me.
Exactly.
Hey guys, I'd like to talk about something real quick.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, I've been through a lot of work stoppages on both sides. You know, 1981, my rookie year, obviously they were out for 50 some odd days. And then in 1994, my first year as GM, remember replacement players, that whole mess in the spring of 95. And, you know, it's really a shame what's going on now. I have a very good feeling that they're going to get this thing resolved today. But in 1981, when I was a player, the two big issues that we talked about were pension and insurance. And to show you how the game has changed financially, and the issues now are competitive balance tax and bonus pool for non-arbitration eligible players. So, you know, times have changed. Back then it was like, we're just trying to build a good insurance-based pension plan. And now it's like a lot of icing on the cake stuff. So it really has changed the labor situation, and the issues have changed in the last 40 years, obviously.
Well, you know, Ed, on that point, and I've always been for the players, and I've never shied away from that, but I think there's a trust factor here. There's owners that are saying they're not making money, but when the players ask them to open up the books to show them that they're not making money, then we see the big contracts being laid out. So I think there's a trust factor that the players sometimes don't trust the owners. Is that an adequate fact there, you think?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, sure. You know, because there's a gulf there between players and ownership. I mean, there's a gulf. Information flow is going back and forth. And, you know, the owners have a right to privacy under the law. They don't have to open up their books. It's they're assuming a lot of the risk. But the hard thing for the owners, the clubs, is that, you know, you've got 30 owners, 30 of these clubs, 30 individual entities who might have 30 different points of view, 30 different strategies. And now you're negotiating with a group of players who are united, and they have one person who is going to do their talking, or a group of people, but they've got everything down to one main philosophy. And now the owners, you have 30. So it's very difficult for the commissioner to try to meld those 30 opinions together to come together as one to face your opponent, not opponent, but on the other side of the negotiating table, against a unified group of people. So it's a very difficult process. And, you know, these people are a lot smarter than me, but I hope they don't get too smart for their own good, because there's a lot of money to go around right now. Because when I got into the front office for the first time in the 90s, you know, it was almost like an upside down bell curve. The only people that made money were the Montreal Expos and New York Yankees. I mean, that's a simplification. Because of the lowest revenue clubs would make money because of revenue sharing, and the highest revenue clubs would make money because they have the highest revenues. And people in the middle, Kansas City, Milwaukee, those people got crushed. Right. So back then, there were owners who were going to be voting on whether to accept this deal, knowing if they play, they're going to lose money. Now I have to believe that every club is making money of some sort. Have to believe that with the television money the way.
Exactly. Just the TV money alone. Yeah.
Yeah. One more, and then I'll give it over to Sal and Karen, but tell me the craziest thing you've had to do to give away a baseball or maybe the rain delays or the worst city you went to. And I mean, there's got to be something, because you've been in a lot of cities, and I can see some of these fans asking for a ball and what they would do to get that baseball from you. You got any stories?
Well, we used to like the hot dogs in Pittsburgh. I don't know why, but we used to like the hot dogs in Pittsburgh. But, you know, we give away baseball for hot dogs. But you had to be careful you weren't going to be on television in the bullpen, because that's how you got in trouble. I'll tell you a funny story about the bullpen and being on television. I was sitting out in the bullpen in 1981 with Jeff Reardon, and the phone rings in the bullpen, and Frank Cashin is on the phone. He tells the guy who answered the phone, send Jeff Reardon up to my office. And he goes, hey, Reardon, the general manager wants to see you. It's during the game. And Reardon used to smoke cigarettes in the bullpen. So he's like, oh, man, the cameras caught me smoking cigarettes. I'm going to get fined. So he leaves for like 20 minutes. He comes back. I said, how much you get fined? He goes, shit, I just got traded to Montreal. He thought he was going to get fined for smoking cigarettes. Oh, God.
Ed.
Barbie borrowed him from Jimmy Leland.
That's right.
Ed.
When he used to palm those cigarettes, like nobody could tell he was smoking, you know.
Ed, to circle back to this lockout, you know, I'm perplexed because it all started favorably, in my opinion. I mean, the union was actually giving incentives to the clubs and draft picks for the clubs that left with their top prospects, left broke camp and came, you know, came north with their prospects. And then it all seemed to go to hell since then. I mean, we all know the bonus pool, the minimum pay, they're the main thing. I mean, the tax, the bonus pool, and the minimum pay are the main three. But they're starting to put the postseason things, how many teams this one wants. That. I think it's a negotiating ploy, because if I want A, B, and C, I mean, if I want A and B, I come to the table and I espouse C, and I let you dog it. I let you turn it down, making you think you got to win at the table. I never wanted it in the first place. That's what I think they're going through now, spite back and forth. For instance, they said the union set $1 million aside for the displaced stadium workers in spring training. Major League Baseball had to counter with the same thing in addition to the other stadiums in the real venues. So they're just trying to outdo each other. It's like a spite game. So why do you think it's going to end soon? I think the egos are taking over.
No, I think because everybody's going to make money.
Right.
You know,
right.
If some of the owners were going to lose money, I think they would, you know, the Hawks, they used to call them, you know?
Yeah.
But let's face it, the only issues that really matter are the economic issues, because – you know, the playoff format, you know, chefs in the clubhouse. We want to have, you know, our own plane to travel on. Those things can be changed during the life of the deal.
Right.
But
right.
The economic issues, once you sign on that line, you might not understand the ramifications of an economic issue until that situation presents itself and you go, oh, my God, what did I do?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the economic issues are the meat and potatoes of this thing. Everything else to me is just fluff. And,
right.
You know, and I
right.
think on both sides, they need to stay out of the media. You know, when you have right. individual players going on Facebook criticizing the commissioner, my goodness. I mean, in my day, we'd never dream of doing something like that. We didn't have the ability to do it. And then when you have somebody on the club side saying something out of turn. And the worst thing is to try to negotiate this thing in the media. Just lock the door, come out when you tell us you have a deal. Everything else is just gamemanship.
Well, not only that, Ed, what people don't realize is that players union is probably the strongest union in this country. It might even be stronger than the Teamsters. So, you know,
bite your tongue.
That's the deal there. Is I can see what the players are fighting for. But, you know, when these strikes come about, it seems like there's a backlash against the players, and it should be that way. You know, we've seen this thing numerous times, that the players make so much money and everything. And I've said it before that nobody complains when, you know, an Andy Garcia or Julia Roberts makes $20 million on a film, but they're quick to point out how much a baseball player makes. Any thought to that?
Well, on the ownership thing, I mean, if owners got introduced and ran out on the field on a daily basis, believe me, they'd be getting booed too. You know, I mean, they're kind of hiding somewhere. Yeah. But I mean, the players are visible. You know, that's who I can boo. You know, I mean, I can say what I want, But I, you know, the players, I can boo them. But, you know, you're right about the union. The union is, maybe the teachers union might be the one that's more powerful now. But the, you know, the players, I used to call it a guild. It was really more of a guild than a union. But I remember Marvin Miller would come in and talk to us, and he talked to us like we were coal miners. And I'm like, yeah, man, you know, we're coal miners. We're the oppressed, you know. And you know, baseball is the only major sport in this country without a hard salary cap. You know, that's the reason why, you know, a team like the Green Bay Packers, who have in the city of Green Bay, I think has 107,000 people, and they can give a guy a $200 million 4-year contract. I mean, let's see the Pittsburgh Pirates do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember one year when the Penguins and the Steelers both won the World's Championship. And a lot of that is due to revenue sharing. Right. You know, they have a chance to compete. And I think that's what ownership is looking for, cost certainty and a chance to compete, even if you're not one of the high revenue clubs.
Karen, what would be your advice to the players' union, knowing that their minimum salary is over $500,000? And would your advice be tongue in cheek? Would it be authentic or would it be sarcastic?
Sal's trying to bust the union.
Yeah, exactly. Take your money and run.
Good advice. Great advice.
Ed doesn't know it, but he's going to show me how to throw a curveball so I can play for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, that ain't going to happen. You'll never play for the Pirates.
It's understandable because they're looking out for guys that aren't even born yet that are going to make it to the majors. I understand they're trying to put something in play, but because you never know what's going to happen, how short your career will be or whatever. And on that note, when you were part of the Cubs organization, you oversaw the drafting of Kerry Wood. And I want to speak on how flame flowers usually burn out. There's a couple exceptions. Bob Feller, and my opinion is because he's 4 years in his prime, he was in the service, so he didn't, you know, throw a lot during those years. And Nolan Ryan, I mean, he has legs like tree trunks. So there are two exceptions. But normally, Doc Gooden, your flamethrowers, as a rule, tend to burn out soon. And that's what happened to Wood. And it's a shame because he was on his way to Cooperstown, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that was my first draft. We were picking fourth in the draft. And the first pick in the draft was the punter from the University of Nebraska, Darren Erstead.
Oh, yeah. About that.
And the second pick was Ben Davis, I think it was, a catcher from the Philadelphia area. Taken by the Padres.
Right.
And now Seattle's picking in front of us, number three. And we thought they might pick Kerry Wood. And if they picked Kerry Wood, we were taking Todd Helton.
Mm-hmm.
And they took Jose Cruz Jr. Mm. And then we took Kerry. And I love Kerry like a son, but, you know, he was on the disabled list 16 times in his career. And I was thinking, boy, if Seattle had taken it, we got Todd Helton. Now I have Mark Grace at the same time, but that's a nice problem to have.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I was there for Dwight Gooden. Dwight Gooden, when he was 18 years old, struck out 300 hitters in 190 innings as an 18-year-old. And then the next year he goes to the major leagues and strikes out 280 in like 250 innings. And then in 1985, you know, he pitches another 250, 260. So he's got, before his 21st birthday, he's thrown like 800 innings, you know, and your arm just can't take that kind of thing.
If that didn't kill him, the cocaine would have. It's a shame.
Yeah.
Tragic.
Unfortunately. I mean, Dwight's like a brother to me. So, yeah. I mean, but, you know, players were different then. Players threw differently back then. Bob Feller, I'm a big believer in this. You know, these guys worked on the farm baling hay 8 hours a day. I mean, right. You know, they're not there to play video games. I mean, you got, you know, guys who were working in coal mines. Stan Kovaleski working in a freaking coal mine. I mean, you know how strong these guys were? And another thing, you know, it seems like every ball that's thrown now in a major league game is at maximum effort. And if I throw a game and I throw 100 pitches, I might throw one or two pitches as I possibly can.
We need fundamentals back. And on that note,
right. talking about baseball and all these financial things too. But I cannot believe it's been an entire hour of Liberty Bell Smack right here with our special guests, Karen and Ed Lynch. And Karen, I have a question for you. For your books or your online courses, if people want to learn more about you and get your books too, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can go directly to our website, and it's finliteracyforher.com. That's like financial, finliteracyforher.com. You can also buy our book. It's called Mind of Gold, A Girlfriend's Guide to Financial Freedom. You can buy it directly off of Amazon.com if you want. And you also can, you can buy our courses right off the website as well.
Wow. That's fantastic. And I'm excited to get your book. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
So then this way we know whether to take the money and run or go, I'll meet Sal at AC at the nearest slot machine. I'm very good at it.
And I'll quiz you on the next show.
Exactly.
Karen, start the car.
I know. And Ed, you've been so kind in just everything that you do. If people want to get in touch with you, even for real estate and things like that, how do they do that?
Well, I'm no longer with Keller Williams. I'm with Keep Moving Forward Realty, KMF Realty in Scottsdale, Arizona. And, so you can just, I'm on Facebook. So just contact me through message system, or I'm not big on social media stuff. So you can tell me how they get a hold of me.
we can do that.
Stay by your phone. The Lakers are going to call you. They need some players.
Well, guys, we'd love to end each of our shows with a Liberty Bell Smack chant. Can you guys hang out just for a minute? And then would you do that with us?
Sure.
Okay, see, they look so confused. It's great.
Yeah, it's like, what do they want from us now?
Well,
you know, it's in the contract.
It's, I have to, well, next week we will have two brand new guests coming on. We have Long Island News Radio talk show host, Fox News contributor Jennifer Harrison, and we will have two-time Emmy-nominated sports journalist, media consultant, and Notoriety Sports Network MLB podcaster Fred Gertini. So those will be great guests coming on next week. So are you guys ready for that show is the question, Mark and Sal?
We're definitely ready each and every week. You know, we're an acquired taste. People can't figure us out, but, you know, once they listen to us, they send everybody over here. We're blessed, man. Look at Karen and Ed, and, you know, it's great.
I came into the world ready. I don't know for what, but I came in ready.
Well, I know what you came in ready
smack
for.
Smack those flyers around being from Pittsburgh, Sal.
What? He was ready for that lip smacking, trash talking, good Philadelphia style Liberty Bell smack. You have been listening to that with our guests, with Karen Azer and Ed Lynch. And I am your host, Marianne Costello, along with Mark Mancini and Sal Tartaglia. We're here every Thursday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on WWDB AM Talk 860. And right now we're getting ready for our chant. And the way we do that is we start off a countdown from 5 to 1, and we all say Liberty Bell Smack. Are you guys ready?
Absolutely.
Okay,
Karen's
do it with
fan.
Us. You ready?
I'm a big fan of The Voice.
Well, this is good. Here we go. Five.
Five.
Four.
Come on, guys.
Three, two, one. Liberty Bell Smack. That's what I'm talking about.